Maybe now, 30 years later, I might have tried to repair the gullet, pack the wound with antibiotic powder, and given a course of penicillin injections. But there, in that cheerless place, looking at the patient animal gulping painfully, coughing up the gouts of blood, I knew I was whacked. A ruptured esophagus was as near hopeless as anything could be. I searched my mind for a suitable speech. "I'm sorry, Mr. Sidlow, but I can't do anything about it." The glasses crackled around me, and the farmer breathed in sharply through his nose. I didn't need to be told what they were all thinking. Another no-good, useless vet. I took a deep breath and continued. "Even if I shifted the potato, the wound would get contaminated when the beast tried to eat. He'd have a gangrene in no time, and that means a painful death. He's in pretty good condition. If I were you, I'd have him slaughtered immediately." The only reply was a virtuoso display from the jaw muscles. I tried another tack. "I'll give you a certificate. I'm sure the meat will pass for the butcher." No cries of joy greeted this remark. If anything, Mr. Sidlow's expression became still more bleak.
"That beast isn't ready for killing yet," he whispered.
"No, but you'll be sending him in before long. Another month, maybe. I'm sure you won't lose much. I tell you what," with a ghastly attempt at heartiness, "if I can come into the house, I'll write you this chit now and we'll get the job over. There's really nothing else for it." I turned and headed across the fold yard for the farm kitchen. Mr. Sidlow followed wordlessly with the family. I wrote the certificate quickly, waves of disapproval washing around me in the silent room. As I folded the paper, I had the sudden conviction that Mr. Sidlow wasn't going to pay the slightest attention to my advice. He was going to wait a day or two to see how things turned out. The picture of the big, uncomprehending animal trying vainly to swallow as his hunger and thirst increased was too strong for me. I walked over to the phone on the windowsill. "I'll just give Harry Norman a ring at the abattoir. I know he'll come straight up if I ask him." I made the arrangements, hung up the receiver, and started for the door, addressing Mr. Sidlow's profile as I left. "It's fixed. Harry will be along within half an hour. Much better to get it done immediately." Going across the yard, I had to fight the impulse to break into a gallop. As I got into the car, I recalled Siegfried's advice. "In sticky situations, always get the car backed round before you examine the animal. Leave the engine running if necessary. The quick getaway is essential." He was right. It took a long time reversing and manoeuvring under the battery of unseen eyes. I don't blush easily, but my face was burning as I finally left the farm. That was my first visit to the Sidlows, and I prayed that it would be my last. But my luck had run out. From then on, every time they sent for us, it just happened to be me on duty. I would rather not say anything about the cases I treated, except to record that something went wrong every time. The very name Sidlow became like a jinx. Try as I might, I couldn't do a thing right on that farm, so that within a short time I was firmly established with the family as the greatest menace to the animal population they had ever encountered. They didn't think much of vets as a whole, and they'd met some real beauties in their time, but I was by far the worst. My position as the biggest nincompoop of them all was unassailable. It got so bad that if I saw any Sidlows in the town, I would dive down an alley to avoid them, and one day in the marketplace I had the unnerving experience of seeing the entire family, somehow jammed into a large old car, passing within a few feet of me. Every face looked rigidly to the front, but every eye I knew was trained balefully on me. Fortunately, I was just outside the drover's arm, so I was able to reel inside and steady myself with a half pint of Younger's Special Heavy. However, the Sidlows were far from my mind on the Saturday morning when Siegfried asked me if I would go through and officiate at Broughton Races. "They've asked me to do it as Greer is on holiday," he said. "But I'd already promised to go through to Casbro to help Dick Henley with a rig operation. I can't let him down. There's nothing much to the race job. The regular course vet will be there and he'll keep you right." He hadn't been gone more than a few minutes when there was a call from the racecourse. One of the horses had fallen while being unloaded from its box and had injured its knee. Would I come right away?